All right, over the last few weeks,
months, couple of months, we've been looking in reference to the aspects of the nature of the church, nature of the kingdom, that we could have to bring into remembrance the great opportunity that we have in Christ. Ephesians 5:23, where Paul, after dealing with, and we'll look at Lord willing as we progress, deals with the marriage relationship, that he says, I speak of Christ and the church. You understand one, I want you to understand how it applies to the other. So this morning we're going to look at the bride of Christ. And so we see responsibilities that we have. The recent studies have focused on the nature of the church regarding the kingdom. Nature is the essence, essential qualities, or attributes of a thing which constitutes it what it is. And the nature of, as the nature of the soul. Now we talk about the nature of man. That's just his nature. You've heard individuals say, well, it's just my nature. You know, your characteristics, whatever makes you who you are and what you are in reference to the matter of society we live in or that of your relationship with God. So any organization, now though the church has organization, it's not an organization, it's actually an organism, because the church is made up of all of the people that constitute the church that Jesus said he would build in reference to that. So what is the nature of the church? And that's what we've been considering in regard to our study. We find that in the up to this point, we've looked as the church, as the elect race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, and people for God's own possession. He's been the body of Christ, the church of Christ, the kingdom of Christ, the household of God, the temple of God, the flock of God. All of these identify who we are, characteristics that are associated with each of these of what we will apply in reference to that of our relationship to God. And this morning we're going to look at it as the scriptures identify of that of the bride of Christ. We find Israel of old, that in Jeremiah 3 and verse 9, that Israel was portrayed in reference to this as an unfaithful spouse, an unfaithful wife. And therefore, in Jeremiah chapter 3 and verse 9, let's go to verse 6. He said, moreover, Jehovah said unto me in the days of Josiah the king, hast thou seen that which backsliding Israel hath done? Now that deals in reference to that of with what they were involved in. The northern kingdom had been taken away. And they had been taken away because of their idolatry. And he said, you see what they have done. She is gone up upon every high mountain and under every green tree, and there has played the harlot. Now you have the Asherah. The Asherah, the Baal, the male part, Asherah, that of the female. The Asherah was kind of like the groves. That's what it was. That they would form these trees in all sorts, apparently, of hideous or whatever fashion, and they would worship in reference to it. I believe that's kind of your first tree huggers, is what you have. But it sets forth the matter of these groves. And Josiah is the one that went down into the Kidron Valley, and that he tore down and cut down all the groves of where they would go to do their worship and to offer their sacrifices unto these idolatrous gods. And he referred to that as being played the harlot. Verse 6, and I said, after she had done all these things, she will return unto me. But she returned not. And her transgressive sister Judah saw it. So here's Judah, the northern kingdom you have, and what they were doing, and God's judgment that was placed upon them, always for the benefit of bringing them back in service to the Lord. It didn't work. They did not return. And Judah's watching this. And we find, I've got to tell all my sons here, and kids are kids. They do what they do. But I was talking with one of them about something that was going on, and he said, I am not my brother. Okay? Because his brother had done the same thing, and he saw it. And he said, I am not my brother. I said, that's what your other brother said. Okay? So you deal with those things. So here's Judah watching what took place with the northern kingdom, but they didn't learn anything. They didn't follow what they should have followed. And he refers to them as her treacherous sister, Judah. That southern kingdom. And I saw when for this very cause that backsliding Israel, the northern kingdom, had committed adultery, I had put her away and given her a bill of divorcement. Yet treacherous Judah, her sister, feared not. And she also went and played the harlot. And it came to pass through the lightness of her whoredom that the land was polluted, and that was their attitude toward it. The land was polluted, and she committed adultery with stones and with stocks. And yet for all this, her treacherous sister Judah hath not returned unto me with her whole heart, but feignly saith unto Jehovah. Feignly is just kind of put it out there where they're receiving. It's like getting whooped, okay? And you said, I'll be good, just to stop the whipping, okay? Whatever the case is. And that's what they wanted. We're getting tired of getting beat here. We'll be good. But it was just a matter of releasing them from the punishment that they were encountering. Did it feignly, not with a pure heart. And that's what he had identified. And so we find that Israel is portrayed here in Jeremiah chapter 3 as an unfaithful wife that he had put away because of her idolatry. That's what he did with the northern kingdom. We find also within the writing of Jeremiah, in Jeremiah chapter 31 and verse 32. Now this deals with the matter of the new covenant. It identified, and the writing of Hebrews supports this application of this, of a new covenant that was promised. And he said in verse 31, "Behold, the days come, saith Jehovah, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to their covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they break, although I was a husband unto them, saith Jehovah." Now this new covenant that God is going to establish, we find that physically the nation of Israel, the northern kingdom, never did come back. Never did. And so it deals with this spiritual covenant, or this covenant with a spiritual people, physical but yet spiritual, with that of the new covenant that Christ brought, that he was going to establish. And it identifies this point of where it's referred to, Israel and Judah are referred to as one of a God as a husband and them as a wife. Therefore, they had their children as a result of all of this. This deals with characteristics and principles of what made up Israel physically, what made up Israel, and what makes up Israel that Paul identified in Galatians chapter 6, verse 17, in reference to that of the Israel of God. That's the church. And so we find that this relationship, of which we understand of Israel of old, is also a relationship we need to understand as far as the church and Christ is concerned. The church of Christ, the church that belongs to Christ. That's what it's involved. Not a shingle that we hang out by the road, but of who it is that we belong to. And it is a relationship, as we'll find within the husband-wife relationship. We find that in reference to this, within the writing of John, when dealing with the bride of Christ, John chapter 3, John 3 and verse 29, when he stated that he that hath the bride is the bridegroom. But the friend of the bridegroom that standeth and heareth him rejoiceth greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. This My joy, therefore, is made full. That's John the Baptist. John the Baptizer was sent with a message at the forerunner of that of Christ. He was not the bridegroom, but he spoke as the bridegroom. As John chapter 3, verse 29 says, "The friend of the bridegroom that standeth and heareth him rejoiceth greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. And this my joy, therefore, is made full." And so that was John the Baptizer, his view of this matter of the bridegroom and therefore the bride. In the writing of Revelation, in Revelation 21, Revelation 21, in verse 1, he said, "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth are passed away, and the sea is no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband." And so this new heaven and new earth identifies these points of a bride that prepared a bride for her husband. And so we're looking in reference to that of what's identified, if we will, in a marriage relationship. We want to consider this morning this matter of the marriage relationship and understand that it is based upon a covenant that is made between the husband and the wife, between the man and the woman. It is a covenant. It's not based upon physical attraction. It's not based upon hormones. It's not based upon fanciful thing of love, of what we might refer to it. If you want to know what love is, you read 1 Corinthians chapter 13. That tells you what love is. It's not an emotional basis. It's one that seeks the best interest of those that you come into contact with. And so we find that that doesn't mean there's not emotions involved. That's like obeying the gospel. You don't obey the gospel because you have an emotional knee-jerk. You obey the gospel out of knowledge. You recognize the covenant. But that doesn't mean that people are not emotional, if you will, about their obedience to the gospel. All right? And so we find that in reference to this, in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24, we find of where the Lord had established the marriage relationship. And this is how we concluded our class this morning. In verse 24 of chapter 2 of Genesis, we find that the Lord said, "Therefore," verse 23, "the man said, this is now bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh, she shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." Now you deal with Genesis chapter 1 that deals with the order of the creation. And when it gets to the end, you find that every male had its female. God created the cattle. Every male had its female. But he got to man, created man, and man didn't have his female. And so Adam had named all of the creatures, all of the creation that God had made. And he gets the man down to the bottom part, and he said, the male had female, but I don't. And so God made woman out of man, and we find that he said that she'll be called woman because she was taken out of man. "Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and they shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, and the man and his wife, and were not ashamed." We find in reference to this that this marriage relationship that God established in the beginning is one that's carried out throughout the existence of mankind upon the earth. That relationship that God established, of which we noted in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 1, where God said that because of fornication, that's unlicensed, that's illegal, illicit sexual intercourse between the man and the woman. In order to avoid that transgression, God established the marriage relationship that makes it now holy. And so we find that God had established this marital relationship. Bobby Joe helped me with the terminology. I always have a tendency that God established the martial relationship. Not marital, but the martial. Anyway, the battle that comes about. So anyway, we find that God established this marital relationship. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, 1 through 5, as we've noted, that the husband and the wife relationship, that each have their obligation. That in it, we find, and of course they had asked a question. You have we have verses, chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, that deal with questions they ask. They ask these questions. What about this, Paul? And so Paul said, now concerning the thing whereof ye wrote. So they asked him about the marriage relationship and their association and part in it. He said, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. And that deals with this matter, euphemistically speaking, of the sexual contact is what that does. But because of fornication, let each man have his own wife, and each woman have her own husband. Let the husband render unto the wife her due, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. For the wife hath not power or authority, hath not power over her own body, but the husband. And likewise also the husband hath not power over his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one the other, except it be by consent for a season, that ye may give yourself unto prayer and may become together again, that Satan tempt you not because of your incontinency, because of your the drive that is innate within the with men and women. He said, but this I say by way of concession, not of commandment. Yet I would that all men were even as I myself, howbeit each man has his own gift from God, one after this manner and one after that. And so we find this relation of what Paul deals with that men be as he is, because when a man marries a woman, now his concern is to her. And that sure hers is now to him. And so those that are not married, all their concern is to that of the God of heaven. And that's the point that he makes. Now it doesn't mean that one is better than the other. He said where your focus is. And so we find that this relationship, the husband-wife relationship, that each have their obligation. However, we find that he said in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 16. Genesis 3 and verse 16. This was after Adam and Eve had transgressed the laws of God. They had eaten of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that God has brought them forth, first Adam, then Eve, then Satan, that he did this. But here's what he said to the woman. He said, unto the woman, he said, I will greatly multiply thy pain and thy conception. In pain thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire, or that concern, or that attention, he said, thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. Now we'll look at what's involved in reference to that. But this desire of the wife to the husband, and that's one that God has placed innately that has been there. And so we find that in reference to this, that in Proverbs chapter 2 and verse 17, Proverbs chapter 2 and verse 17, of whence we find that this principle that was set forth in this relationship between that of the man and the woman is one of a guide that we saw from the writing of Jeremiah, that we have. Proverbs chapter 2, verse 17. Talks about he's dealing with the strange woman, and that's the one that left her husband. She's waiting in the path for the man to come by. She entices the man to come in while her husband is away, is what she does. And he said that this woman, verse 16, to deliver thee from the strange woman. That's why he's given this information unto his son. Even from the foreigner that flattereth with her words. That she's able to flatter the man. And to get him to acquiesce to this request. That forsaketh the friend of her youth. And forgetteth the covenant of her God. This relationship of what they deal, this foreign woman, this one that is enticing this man to come into her while her husband is away, and that she forsakes the friend of her youth. And this matter of friend, American Standard, King James says a guide. That he had the guide and a responsibility to guide her in that way which is in accordance with the will of God. And in this relationship, the woman subjects herself to this covenant. The covenant that is made. We find that within the writing of Malachi, in Malachi chapter 2. Malachi chapter 2 and verse 14. We find that in reference to this, and I do this, say this, I've got young, someday you'll marry, Lord willing. Be your desire. You need to know the facts of this covenant that you're going to be a part of. Because you make a covenant. Malachi chapter 2, verse 14. We find that as a result of the men dealing with their wives in a treacherous matter, their wives were weeping. God said, I'm not going to accept your sacrifices because of this. He said in verse 13, yet ye say, wherefore? Why not do that? Because Jehovah hath been a witness between thee and the wife of thy youth, against whom thou hast dealt treacherously, though she is thy companion and the wife of thy covenant. God is a witness between the covenant that the man and the woman make in that marriage feast, in that marriage relationship, that they now are legally allowed to consummate that, and she becomes his wife, and her husband. It's a covenant. A covenant is an agreement. The Jews used to, some of them may still do it, but they used to, we talk about prenuptials, that was a part of their relationship. Here's how this is going to work. If you do not abide by your covenant, these are the consequences. Heard a fellow one time that he said, boy, if I'd known that was going to happen, I'd have never done that. Well, you need to know what's going to happen. And here's what the Lord says. And for this man, if it's a man that goes away from his wife, the Lord also identified within the writing of Proverbs that all you've got is now going to be the property of another man. That's what's going to happen. And God lays all of this out. We read over, I got that. But we need to let it sink in. This is a covenant. You write, if you will, you go down and you buy something, you buy it on credit, whatever the case is that you have it, you buy a house, you buy an automobile, it doesn't matter what it is. They always say, read the fine print. Well, you sign that, you agree to make your payments every month at the specified amount. That's what you agree to. And if you don't, they'll take what you've got. You'll go to court, you'll end up paying. That's the process. You must abide by the covenant that nobody made you take or sign. That's what you choose to do. And so it is with the marriage relationship that God says there is a covenant, an agreement that you make. And when you get ready to marry, you best know what the details are of that covenant. God makes them. You don't get to make them. God makes them. And you need to know what the details of that covenant are. And we find that God, as Malachi 2 verse 14 tells us, God is a witness. And therefore, in the writing of Matthew, in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 6, Matthew 19 and verse 6, that when they came, the Pharisees came trying him, says, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? They had two schools of thought. One of them was you couldn't put away your wife at all. For any reason, you couldn't put away your wife. The other one, you could put her away for every cause. Burn the toast. If you find something unseemly, and they would take and apply that unseemly to whatever they wanted. All right. But the problem is that what it was, they wanted another woman. That was the problem that they had. And we find that the Lord tells them in verse 4, have ye not read that he who made them from the beginning made them male and female and said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh, so that they are no more two but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder. They saith unto him, well, why then did Moses command to give a bill of divorcement and to put her away? He saith unto them, Moses, for the hardness of your heart, suffered you to put away your wives, but from the beginning it hath not been so. They were bound determined to put away their wives. Moses said, all right, here's the rules. Here's the rules. Couldn't just put her away. She goes out and goes to another man, she could be put to death. So he gave them a writing of divorcement. They were bound determined to have it their way. And Moses said, all right, here's the rules. And that's what he sets forth. The Lord said, I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And he that marrieth her, when she is put away, committeth adultery. Verse 10, it's interesting to note that the disciples take upon this. They said, if the case of the man, if the case of the man is so with his wife, it is not expedient to marry. Well, if I can't put her away, it's better not to even have her. Okay? I mean, that's kind of the way, that's how rampant this was in reference to it. And the Lord said unto them, not all men can receive this saying, but they to whom it is given. And here goes to the men. You understand this. For there are eunuchs that were so born from their mother's womb. And there are eunuchs that were made eunuchs by men. And there are eunuchs that made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He that is able to receive it, let him receive it. The matter of abstinence, that's what he deals with in this particular thing. They said, if we can't get rid of her, what, you know, best we not have it. The Lord said, you have to make a choice. What are you going to do? And so we see that this marriage relationship, the covenant that's associated with it, has a lot of fine print. It's not fine print, but it might as well be if we don't understand it, we don't read it, and we don't follow it. We find that in reference to this, that in reference to the new covenant, that's where we are. Jeremiah 31:13-34 identifies this matter of the new covenant that God said that he was going to establish. He identified that, behold, the day comes, saith Jehovah, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel, with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they break, although I was a husband unto them, saith Jehovah. But this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith Jehovah. I will put my law in their inward parts, and in their heart will I write it. And I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor, and every man his brother, saying, know Jehovah. Under the Jewish dispensation, they were brought into the nation, they received the circumcision, brought into the nation, and then they were taught to know the Lord. The Lord said, that's not going to be the case. They will know the Lord before they enter into that relationship. Not going to be taught it later, but that they will have that understanding. For they shall all know me, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith Jehovah, for I will forgive their iniquity, and their sin will I remember no more. Those that come into the kingdom
are of a mature age, recognize their transgression, and they seek the Lord's admission to the kingdom through their obedience to the laws of God. And he said, I will forgive their iniquities. That's this new covenant of which individuals are called upon to obey. All right, Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22. We bring this in reference to that of the church and how it applies to our relationship. The nature of the church as far as this husband-wife relationship is concerned, because it denotes Christ's relationship to the church. Verse 22. Wives, be in subjection unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, being himself the Savior of the body. Now the head is like a spearhead. You have the spearhead that goes forth first. He will go forth first. He's the head of the wife and a Savior of the body. His intent is to see to her salvation in reference to that of obedience to the gospel. He has that obligation. It's not an under the thumb head. Okay? It's a directing head. Christ directs us. Christ is the head of the church. But our obedience and subjection to the laws of God is a willing thing. And women that fulfill this responsibility are of the best character the world has to provide, that God has to provide. Verse 24. But as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives also be to their husbands in everything. Everything. It's kind of like a proverb. Proverbs chapter 1 doesn't start with the matter, I'm going to convince you there's a God. He said, no, there's a God. And that the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom, that knowledge that we need. And so we find that Paul is not talking about this matter of the husband and wife relationship as being that which is outside of the laws of God. Everything that the husband will do will be for the benefit, first of all, of God's approval, and two, the benefit of the wife. Therefore, you follow that. We noted within the writing of Proverbs, talked about the guide. The husband is to be the guide. To guide them in the right path is the husband's responsibility. And the wives are to be in subjection to him in everything. It's not one of persecution and oppression. It's one of recognizing a covenant. Paul talked about within the Corinthian letter in regards to the matter of being unequally yoked with unbelievers. You could have a yoke between a husband and wife, but it's unequal because one's pulling to that of the world and one's pulling to that of the cause of Christ. And that's going to cause a conflict. The wife is to be in subjection to her husband in everything. He's going to direct her. He's going to lead her in that path that is according to the will of God. That's the responsibility that he has. Husbands, love your wives even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for it. Willing to die for it. And that's what he did. That he might sanctify, set it apart, having cleansed it by the washing of water with the word, that he might present the church to himself, a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. Even so ought husbands also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his own wife loveth himself. No man ever hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as Christ also the church. Man will take, he will feed it, he'll clothe it. He'll keep it full, he'll keep it warm, or cool, or whatever the case is. And that's what's involved within
cherishing. No man ever hated his own body. Some folks say, well, what about suicide? That's what he deals with. A man loves it, he will keep it clothed, he will keep it fed. And that's what he does. And as he cherishes at Christ also the church. He will feed us, he will keep us, he will guard us, he will guide us. And he makes that, you understand that, you understand that with the marriage relationship. You understand that. Now let me help you understand your relationship with Christ. He said, verse 29, for no man ever hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as Christ also the church, because we are members of his body. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. How many times have we read that in this process? And the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is great. But I speak in regard of Christ and of the church. Paul said, you understand that relationship here. You understand it over here with Christ and the church. Nevertheless, do ye also severally love each one his own wife, even as himself, and let the wife see that she fear her husband. Now that's a responsibility that's given. Those are given. Okay. Ephesians 5 is not given for as a club to the man. The wife said, he tells the wife, you're supposed to be in subjection to me. This is her male. This is hers. Her male is to submit to her husband in everything. His male is that he is to love her as Christ loved the church. Would not do anything to its demise or its hurt. And he says, I speak in regard to Christ and the church. In the rite of Revelation, Revelation 21, verse 9. This relationship of whence he stated, and there came one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls, who were laden with the seven last plagues, and he spake with them, saying, come hither, I will show thee the bride, the wife of the Lamb. The church, in reference to it, the bride of Christ. And the Lord gives us the instructions with that relationship. You understand one, now understand the other. He said the mystery is great, but he reveals it to us. That which was once a mystery is no longer a mystery because he has revealed it in reference to that. So our question is, has the marriage relationship established an exclusive relationship between the man and the woman? So also is the church's exclusive relationship with Christ as the head. Do we recognize it? Do we abide by it? Are we appreciative of what has been provided on our behalf? The nature of the church as the bride of Christ.